I'll tell you a story about Zhao, French fries, and a case of pathological generosity. Zhao was 49 years old and sort of lived a quiet life. He was a businessman, and he was known for being somewhat frugal and maybe even to the point of being stingy. And he had a health incident that changed his life. He had a stroke at a fairly young age. And it transformed him in ways that no one could have predicted. He went into business with his brother. He sort of left his office job and went into a business selling French fries on the streets of Rio de Janeiro. And the only problem was that he gave away more French fries than he sold. And so this was a problem because his brother-in-law would say, "Where's the money? You know, where's the money for the food and the supplies? You came home and you had a lot of French fries when you started, but you just gave them all away." And what they discovered was, through visits with this neurologist, is that what had happened in his brain is that we all have this like little filter in the front of our frontal lobes of our brain, and it's the thing that allows us to sort of plan long term and to be prudent and to not just be impulsive about things. But apparently, in his stroke, he had sort of lost that capacity. And so what was working in his brain was this triggering mechanism that we all have in our brains too. When we do something generous for others, there is a part of our brain that triggers with great energy and life and joy. And that's the only thing that was working in his brain. So he couldn't stop giving. He had what his neurologist called a case of pathological generosity. Wouldn't it be great to be thought of as somebody who has pathological generosity? Wouldn't it be great to be thought of as a church with pathological generosity? That we just didn't know how to stop giving. We'd lost that filter somewhere along the way. Now, the Corinth United Methodist Church was having their own stewardship campaign. Now, many of you probably received in the mail a letter written by me, and I'm sure you all saved it, and you have it sitting on your counters with your pledge cards waiting for next week, right? You're not convincing me here. But anyway, Paul is writing a letter to the church at Corinth. This might actually be as his fourth letter. There's one letter that he may have actually ripped up because he was so angry at them that he never sent it. There's some reference to that. And there's some suggestion that maybe 2 Corinthians is actually a combination of two letters that he wrote. And anyway, in this second letter to the Corinthians, Paul is writing about this offering that they're taking for the church in Jerusalem, the mother church. And Paul sees this as really important for a couple of reasons. Number one, the mother church is struggling. They are in a real case of need. They are poor, and they're just struggling to get by. And so he's been calling on all of these churches that he's been starting in these Gentile communities to take up an offering that he could then take with him to the Jerusalem church, the mother church, as a sign of solidarity. And he sees this not just as a practical thing, but this is a highly symbolic thing as well. Because if you know anything about the early church, there was a struggle between sort of the Jewish Christians and the Gentile Christians. And Paul saw this as a way that they might all come together with one common mission and one sense of mutuality. And if the Gentile churches were offering their gifts to the mother church, the Jewish church, then maybe they would begin to see each other in a different light. So it's really important to him, and this is where he begins. He says, in the midst of a very severe trial, he's talking about the Macedonian churches who have already taken up an offering, and they are fairly poor. They don't have much. They're modest means. He said, in the midst of very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. Isn't that a great phrase? Overflowing joy and their poverty welled up in generosity. It reminds me of the story I read recently about a woman who was visiting in China. She lived in LA now. She was originally from China, but she was back home visiting and family and friends. Now very active in a church in Los Angeles. And she was visiting a small country church made up mostly of pretty poor farmers in Nanjing. And they asked her as their guest that day to tell us about her home church back in L.A. And so she brought a report about some of the ministries that they were doing and the fact that they were in the middle of a building campaign. They were building a new part, their ministry was growing so much they needed more space. They were putting on an addition. And the church in L.A. was fairly affluent. They had means to be able to do this, certainly comparison to this little church there in Nanjing. But to her great surprise, she was invited up at the end of the service, and the pastor presented her with the morning's offering. Their whole offering, $140. And they said, here, use this for your church. Their severe trial, their overflowing joy, their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. What an amazing witness. Now, Paul uses the encouragement of these of the Macedonian churches to try to inspire the church at Corinth to remember, you got a lot of stuff here. You are blessed with abundant riches. You started this thing last year, now finish it. For if the willingness is there, the gift is acceptable according to what one has. And he knows that the Corinthians have a lot. Now make good on what you started last year, he says to them. You were the first to jump in. Now finish what you've started. And let your generosity match the generosity of these other churches. Now in that letter that you all read and saved, you know the one I talked about a minute ago? Or in the front page of the newsletter, just in case you did not save the letter, I told some stories about amazing generosity that inspire me and maybe might inspire us to live generous lives. The story of a third grade teacher up in Dorchester, Massachusetts, who was awarded for her excellence in teaching a prize of $150,000 that she had at her disposal to do anything she wanted. It was for her. There were no strings attached to it, and she chose to donate it back to her school in its entirety, because they needed it more than she did. Or the woman, Beth Hughes, a homemaker, single mom, living at home, taking care of her kids. It was in line at the grocery store for Thanksgiving, so she had it all out there, a big spread. And the woman in front of her, before she could say anything, slid her credit card and said, I'm paying for your groceries, all $214 of it. Have a great Thanksgiving. Have a great Thanksgiving. Or there was a story run in the Detroit News, the Free Press. They ran the story about this man who was struggling to make ends meet. James Robertson he worked at a job that had him walking a total of 21 miles, taking two different buses to go back and forth to a job where he's making $10.55 an hour. And a college student heard the story on the news and started a GoFundMe crowdsourcing effort. And they raised $350,000 for this man to give him a new lease on life. And to boot, the local Ford dealership gave him a car. He didn't have to walk to work anymore. I hear stories of amazing generosity like that, and I am inspired to want to give more myself. Because I figure if someone can do that, then what is God calling me to do with what I have? And that's exactly the way that Paul is using the offering and the generosity of the Macedonian churches to inspire the Corinthian church. He says, you have so much. The Corinthian church was a lot more like Severna Park, United Methodist Church. We have affluence coming out of our ears. We have so much here, but are we willing to share? Are we willing to live generous lives? Now, you'd think we would, because there are factual, scientific benefits to being generous. Generosity is a hot topic of study these days. At the University of Notre Dame, they have an institute for the science of generosity. And they're doing PhD level, graduate level studies on generosity. What makes us generous? What makes us pass on generosity to our kids? What makes one family generous and not another family generous? And so there's a lot of study going on. Not all this research comes out of there, but I've been fascinated reading about this institute on generosity. When you give to another person, there's this physiological response. I already named it for you earlier. And your brain lights up as if though you were receiving something. They've done studies to show what's the difference in the brain between getting a gift and giving a gift, and there's no difference. The same part of the brain triggers, which is to say that when we give, we feel like we're getting. We're wired for giving. We're wired to give. Generosity is contagious. They've done study after study how one act of generosity begets another act of generosity and creates a cycle, right? Sort of a paying it forward that happens. Generosity is one of the key factors for a happy marriage. We think of all those other things, communication and all of those things, but generosity has been sort of pulled out as one of the key indicators. How generous you are with your spouse. Do you get up early and make coffee, say, for your wife, like I do every day? No, I'm not trying to pat myself on that, but I do make coffee for Holly. But what are the little ways that spouses are generous to each other? They go out of their way to say, I love you, and it results in generous attitudes and generous acts. And they say couples that express generosity to each other with regularity and in big and in small ways are just plain happier. Research shows that those who have provided practical help for friends, they have a lower risk of dying. So give so you don't die. That's a good, that could be the best stewardship sermon ever, right? Jesus said something about that. He said, if you want to find life, you're going to give yourself away, so maybe there's some connection there. But there is actually people who are more generous, who have a bigger arena for their lives than just their own small life. They stay involved in the world, and they give themselves away. They actually live longer because they're not just living for themselves. And doing volunteer work has high levels of satisfaction, but this is the one that I really like. In 120 out of 136 countries, people donated to charity in the past month reported greater satisfaction with life. So if you just gave something in the last month on a quotient of happiness, those people score higher. And look at this. In all 136 countries, it had a similar impact on happiness levels as doubling household income. Had the same effect. If you had just given something, it didn't even matter what or how much, if you had just given something away, it had the same impact as if somebody had doubled your household income. Isn't that amazing? You would think that we would be more generous just because there's so many benefits tied to it. And yet, statistically, the numbers don't bear that out. Statistically, only 2.6 of us in the United States give away 10% or more of our wealth. And about 80% of us give away 2% or less of what we have. Those are sobering statistics when you think about how much we have. How much we have. Now, we'd all like to be known as generous, wouldn't we? We all want a reputation of being generous, but we'd also like to buy it cheap somehow. Can we cut a corner here and still be known as generous? I think that's a great quote. I think it sort of names who we are. It names our flaws as well as our aspirations. Shane Claiborne is somebody who's living a generous life, and he was one of the presenters in the small group study I was teaching earlier this fall. We were looking at practices of faith. What are those things that make us Christian? So we looked at things like prayer, and we studied the Lord's Prayer together. We looked at serving and what it means to give in the name of Christ. We looked at worship and the sacraments. And one of the sessions was about money and our stuff and our resources. How we handle our stuff is a spiritual practice. It's not just a matter of economics. It's not just a matter of good budgeting. It's a spiritual practice. And Shaden Claiborne is one of the new monastics. He's living in Philadelphia in an intentional Christian community, and they're just trying to live as good neighbors where they are. They're not there with a program. They're not there to fix people. They're just there to live the gospel as best as they can. They pray together, they eat together, they share their lives together, and they reach out in organic and natural ways because they know their neighborhood and they know their neighbors. And so he's going to talk. His presentation was so good, I wanted to share just a little bit of it with you today.
Here's the good news. The good news is that God didn't mess up. God didn't make too many people or too little stuff. God made enough. There is enough for everyone's need, but there's not enough for everyone's greed. Proverbs offers this vision. Give me neither poverty nor riches, for in my poverty I might be forced to steal, but in my riches I might forget my God. So we need a theology of enough. Enough. This day our daily bread. Not a theology of prosperity or scarcity, but a theology of enough. And the Bible has this vision that there is enough. One of the first stories we have is God pouring out food from heaven for the Israelites. But God also commands them, don't take more than one day's ration. and there will be enough. In the story of Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit falls on the early church, one of the things that happens is they start sharing everything. It says that no one claimed any of their possessions were their own, but they shared everything they had, and there were no needy persons among them. And of course, when it comes to money and sharing, it doesn't get any better than Jesus. Jesus tells someone to sell everything they have and give it to the poor. He sends his disciples out and says to them, maybe even to us, live like the lilies and the sparrows. Don't worry about tomorrow. Don't stockpile for the future. His constant message from life to death is that the best thing to do with the best things in life is to give them away. He says, if you want to find your life, lose it. What good is it to gain the whole world and lose your soul? Sharing possessions and money is one of the central practices of the Christian church from the beginning of time. And here's the deal. Generosity can't be forced. It can't be legislated. It has to be provoked. It has to be provoked in us by love. So what we're talking about is, as idealistic as it may sound, is a global movement of love, of people loving their neighbors as themselves. Nearly every day I hear of little experiments in that movement of love, of folks sharing stuff. There's a community of folks around the world that are right now pulling their money together and bringing needs up of neighbors as they hear of them and meeting those needs out of that common fund, tens of thousands of dollars each year. There's another group of 20,000 folks in the U.S. that are committed to meeting each other's medical bills. And this little group has met over $15 million in medical bills this year, over $500 million since its inception. And then there's a smaller, the little local movements of neighborly love. Folks like this community on a cul-de-sac that I visited that decided not everybody needs a lawnmower, so they created a tool share, where folks can sign out drills and weed eaters, and they can share stuff as a neighborhood. I met another suburban family that for them, loving their neighbor as herself, meant that they were going to try to spend as much money on other people's kids going to college as their own. So they created a scholarship fund, matching dollar for dollar, every dollar that they spend on their own kids' scholarships. And then I visited a congregation that had created a Jubilee fund, so that they could match the money that they were raising for their new building, dollar for dollar. And with the Jubilee Fund, they are creating water access for an entire village overseas. So that's what sharing can look like in the world we live in. All of these little experiments ask us to do something beyond the stuff, though. They invite us to look into the face of our neighbor across the street or on the other side of the world, and say, I'm going to love this person in the same way that I love myself. And that movement can change everything. It changes the way that we think about money and stuff. In the end, as the scripture says, as we give an account for our lives to God, this won't just be a doctrinal test or questions of eschatology or the inerrancy of scripture. We won't be asked whether we believe Mary was really a virgin or the world was really made in 7 days. But we will be asked, when I was hungry, did you feed me? When I was a stranger, did you welcome me in? When I was sick, did you take care of me? When I was in prison, did you come visit me? The real test of our faith is how it expresses itself in love and compassion to the most beat up and broken people in our world. I remember a funny story with Mother Teresa where someone came up to her a little starry eye and they said, oh, Mother Teresa, you're such a saint. I couldn't do what you do if someone paid me $1 million. And Mother Teresa said, I wouldn't do it if you paid me $1 million either. I'll do it because it's what I'm made me for. And in the end, this is what we're made for. We're made for love and sharing and generosity and compassion. I'll never forget learning a little lesson of generosity when I was over in India with Mother Teresa and the sisters. Every Tuesday, we would get all the street kids together, all the homeless kids, and we would throw this huge party, and we would play games and eat a big meal. And one of those Tuesdays, one of the kids came up to me and told me it was his birthday. So I started thinking, what can I get this kid? And I sneak up, I can get him an ice cream and then bring it back and say, happy birthday. And the kid, first he looks at it, he's just mesmerized, he's so excited, he just holds it and shakes. And then his instinct is, this is too good to keep for myself. He yells at all the other kids and goes, we've got ice cream! He brings them all over, he lines them up, and he goes, everybody's going to get a lick! He walks down the line and gives every kid a lick of that ice cream. He knew the secret. The best thing to do with the best things in life is to give them away.
Now, of course, you knew the ask was coming, right? This is part of what this is about. It's an important part. What we give in and through the life of this church matters. And so next week, we are asking that you bring with you a pledge of your resources in proportion to what you have. That's what Paul says. Those who have much, you give more. If you don't have as much, you don't give as much. But give in proportion to what you have as you have been blessed. We need your help in closing out the year strong. We, you know, this time of the year, coming into September and early fall months, we are playing catch up to try to finish the year strong. So we need your financial resources. But we're greedier than that. We want more from you. We want you to live generous lives. Your money is important, but did you hear that word in the call to worship today? That our giving, in our giving, Jesus bends our hearts toward generosity. It's more than just the money we put in the plate. That's important, but it's not only about that. We've been blessed this week to live out a week of generous living. We've seen it in meals prepared in the kitchen, as we've welcomed guests all week long, and it's been a time of mutual blessing, a time when we have given, but we have received as well, where we have reconnected with old friends, where we've made new friends. There they are trying Lynn Weber's famous chicken. You see, the common thread is all with these smiles. This is the laundry brigade. People who come in the and would clean laundry and bring it back for our guests. One of the guests came up to me and said, did you know they put a whole bunch of new clothes in somebody's bag over there? And that was something somebody had just done on their own in the congregation. There's Lynn in the kitchen, they're the regular crew as well as new people. This is the only picture Helen has ever let me take of her face on. I'm going to frame and keep that picture forever. She actually posed for me. We prayed together before every meal, and we prayed for each other and with each other. We served together. But the thing that makes, and these two ladies, Carol and Pam, really hold it all together for us. When I saw Kristen offering one of our guests medicine, it felt like the scriptures were coming to life, offering a cup of cold water in the name of Christ. We had families serving, coming helping out with bingo. We had Josh with his guitar one night, the praise band played, Dick did a magic show for our guests yesterday. But it was the partnerships and the relationships that formed that were so powerful and meaningful for me. Some of these guests are with us today.
Hey.
And that's right. Amazing that Nan would let us know that she's here. I can't imagine that. And part of my joy was I had the opportunity again to sit and talk with a lot of people, but also to ask people if they wanted me to do a portrait for them. And so I had a chance to sort of spend that holy moment with them, sharing their life, their dignity, their joy, their compassion, their struggle, their continued commitment to each other, their continued commitment to try to make something of their lives. That sunshine. You know why she's called sunshine, don't you? That with her smile. That's that smile, sunshine. And I won't ever forget these faces or these lives, and I hope that you won't either. This was voted Best Portrait of the Week, by the way. True generosity is an offering given freely and out of pure love, no strings attached, no expectations. Time and love are the most valuable possession you can share. One of the gifts that happened this week for me was witnessing the generosity in this community among our guests themselves. When they discovered that one of the men didn't have any other clothes other than what he's wearing, some of the other men started giving him stuff out of their meager possessions so he could have more to wear. And then on Friday night, when one of these families was here, Ashley, you saw her with her picture with her husband up there. Ashley sort of took this little girl, Heather, under her wing, and they were running around, they were coloring together, doing stuff. And I saw Ashley go over to the vending machine, our vending machine, and buy little Heather, with her money, a treat. So the generosity was flowing in both directions. So mutual, so real. So the question at the end of all of this, bigger than our stewardship campaign, really, it's as big as our lives, it's as big as our faithfulness, is how generously are you willing to share your ice cream cone? How generously will you share your ice cream cone?